How many of you have never been to a Michigan Radio Issues and Ale event before? Just raise your hand. Wow, okay. A lot of first-timers. Welcome. We're glad to have you here. And how many of you, probably not as many, how many of you have never been to Bill's Beer Garden before? Okay, a smaller number, but still quite a few first-timers. So welcome. So if you've never been to a Michigan Radio Issues and Ale event before, these are discussions that we do periodically, every month or so, looking at different sort of important issues that are happening in Michigan. But we try to do them in a fun atmosphere where you can have a libation of your choice. And sometimes that helps prompt a little more conversation as well. I didn't introduce myself, by the way. I'm Steve Krupinski. I'm the marketing director of Michigan Radio. Thank you. We have several of our staff that are here as well. Our engineer tonight is Tony Brown. We have at our table back here in the corner, Anna Magdell of our corporate support department. Kate Wells, who is one of our reporters from Michigan Radio, in the red. And Lester Graham, the dapper-looking gentleman who didn't get the memo that it was casual night. So he is here. And in line, way back there, is Emily Fox, you may know as one of our on-air hosts. So she is so special, she goes right to the back of the line. So, all right, so we hope you're going to enjoy tonight's event. Our topic tonight is fixing government. We figure we should get that solved in about 20 minutes, and then we'll move on to world peace. So without further ado, let me introduce you to our host tonight. You know, as Michigan Radio's political analyst, you can hear his commentaries on Michigan Radio daily, as well as during morning edition and weekend edition. And he will introduce you to our panel. Ladies and gentlemen, Jack Lessenberry.
Well, that's a lot more than I deserve. So starting out on my extremely far left, metaphorically, is Chris Kolb, who had a long career as a legislator and is now the president of Michigan Environmental Council. And next to me is Jonathan Oosting, who is a Dutch refugee. And he now supports himself by working for MLive. He is a very fine journalist. Next to me is Zoe Clark, who performs the same function daily for me as Ronald Reagan's chief of staff did for him. She's my brain, in other words, and she's one of the most knowledgeable observers about everything I know and a lot more photogenic than the rest of us. So anyhow, our topic... Now, the format is very simple. You can only raise your hand if you agree with me totally. But we're going to start... We're going to start by, this is called liberal bias in the media. I pose a question or two before our audience, and then if you'd like to ask something, raise your hand, and when I call on you, say who you are. You know who we are, so it's not only fair we know who you are. If you want to say something like, you know, John Smith, intergalactic consultant, that'll be great. And if you have a question addressed to one person in particular,
they're cutting you off
say
already.
So. one other thing, please ask a question. Don't make a speech. So, having said that, Larry, did you want to say something else?
I'm sorry. So when it comes to Q&A time, we do have a wireless mic. We are recording tonight's event, so we are going to ask you to come up to the microphone. Anna is going to be here with a microphone, and since it's a really hot day and we're sort of crowded, rather than asking Anna to run around wherever you are, Anna's going to be positioned over here near this gentleman who's currently checking stock prices. And, we'll do that later. And so just come on up to Anna when we get to the Q&A portion, and she'll give you the microphone, and we'll take your questions on. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So I wanted, by the way, this is as casual as I ever get. We're a little late because my briefcase had to be surgically removed. So I want to start by posing this question, and since I am unimaginative, we'll start with the left and move to the right. Our thing is about fixing government. And I want to start by asking Chris, is Michigan government as broken as it's ever been or as broken as you've ever seen it?
Well, in all my 25 years that I've been on this earth, I've never seen it as bad. Now,
he was raised on Pluto, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, being from Ann Arbor, I think we always thought that Lansing was broken and a little bit crazy. But it has gotten, I think, worse. I was in the legislature 2001 through 2006. We could still put together bipartisan coalitions, work together, figure out what the problem was, what the solutions were, put together the votes, and get it off to the governor, regardless of whether it was a Republican or Democratic governor. And there was bruises and scrapes and, you know, some name-calling, a few fisticuffs, you know, times, but nothing like today where it's just really hardened positions. No one wants to seem to compromise. In fact, compromise is a bad word. I'd hate to be in the majority caucus room when they're going over different options. I think that would just be brutal when the speaker comes in or the majority leader comes in and says, well, what about this compromise? And they just get booed down in there. And it was, when I was there, there were a handful of really conservatives who were very rigid in their position. You could say there were some rigid liberals, but we were in the minority, so it didn't really matter. Today, the vast majority of those caucuses are very rigid in their political beliefs. They'd rather be right than get something done. And so the real short answer is yeah, I think it's about as broken as it's ever been.
Right. Jonathan, is the same for you. You've maybe been watching it a little less long, but what do you think?
Yeah, well, actually, since I've been covering Lansing only about 3 years now, it's been a Republican-controlled legislature and a Republican governor for that entire time. So I think how broken you view Lansing sort of depends on your political persuasion. Republicans are getting a lot of stuff done. They haven't gotten roads done, which is a huge one, because that might require some compromise. But on a lot of things right now, they don't need to compromise. They pass something like 600 new laws a year. Certainly a lot is happening in Lansing. We hear a lot about the big issues that they don't solve, because those sometimes are the biggest issues, actually, and represent more of a dispute within the Republican caucus itself as opposed to a political divide across party lines. So on road funding, for instance, we all know the issue is new revenue versus taxes, and that's divided the Republican Party, and they can't go it alone.
I think new revenues and taxes is the same thing.
Excuse me. Existing revenue or
revenue
or taxes,
enhancements, so. If you really
revenue
want to talk about it correctly.
Yeah, revenue reprioritization is what they call it. A lot is happening in Lansing. People might not like everything that does happen there, though.
Zoe?
Is government broken? Absolutely not. And this is not just because I literally got three calls from three individual lawmakers who listen to Michigan radio, which is always really, really nice to hear, who were livid at the promo that maybe you heard on the radio talking about is government broken? How can we fix government? A, saying how dare the four of us think tonight over some beers we might be able to fix things. Which is our plan, obviously. And B, going over exactly what Jonathan is saying, you know, police officers usually still come if you call 911. Your kids can still get into a school. Now, obviously, we can all argue about whether or not the police come as quick as they should or the schools are as good as they should be. I'm under the assumption right now that we're all here right now, free speech, we're able to have a couple beverages, talk about government not working. In my mind, fundamentally, government is working, but there's some big issues right now that need to be fixed. And that, I think, is taking up all of the oxygen in everyone's room.
And my perspective, since I'm the sole member of the panel to be older than dirt, is that I hate to disagree with Zoe, but yes, government is broken. Yes, it still delivers some services. It functions in a way sort of like, you know, the frog who you stick the pin in his head and he can still move his feet. But as far as things, issues of top priority to the people of Michigan, state government is sort of severely broken. The only example that I can remember when it was like this was in the very late 1950s, under Governor Soapy Williams, and we had a gerrymandered Senate. The Senate was only had, I think, five Democratic members, and there were these slogan. There was a national slogan that the new cocktail was Michigan on the rocks. There were payless paydays for state workers. But anyway, from that, the only other question I'm going to put to our panel before we turn to the really interesting people, I'm going to start with Zoe again so I can go back down, is what one thing would you do first? What would be the most important one thing you could do to fix whatever's wrong with it?
Yeah, and this is going to be probably one of the more unpopular things, but I'm going to agree with you, Jack, so I'm taking the ship down together. And that is term limits, something that we're going to talk a lot about tonight. Before we started this evening, we... one of the things that we sort of discussed about three basic things that likely we want to talk about is term limits, redistricting reform, gerrymandering is another way to put it, and free beer for all. Because, I mean, those three things are going to fundamentally fix it. No, the third would be some kind of dark money reform, right? Some idea of how much money is into the system and how many people are working towards goals that are not the goals that all of us share, because some folks are able to give much more money than we are.
I hate to disagree with the goddess. This will undoubtedly get me moved from Dante's,
this is gonna be so
Dante's
tonight.
Second circle of hell to the first. But I think even more important than term limits is gerrymandering and redistricting reform. But Mr.
I didn't put them in order. I was just throwing them out there.
And Zoe already went through the top three. I'll agree with Jack and say the gerrymander. For the U.S. Congress, it was something like 58% of voters voted for Democrats, and yet Republicans hold 9 out of those 15 seats.
14, we lost one.
Sorry, 9 out of those 14 seats. At the state level, Democrats won roughly 50% of the vote. In state Senate and state House races, yet have a super minority in the state Senate. They have 11 members now, 10 if you don't count Virgil Smith, who is...
He's the one that's going to jail. So.
Yeah, probably going to jail. They really don't have any power in the state Senate. I mean, the state Senate right now, the Republican majority can do whatever they want if they have the will to do
exactly.
So.
Exactly.
I would say that, I mean, we have always had, in Michigan and in most states, the legislature has the ability to draw its own districts. What's really changed, so that's, it may or may not be a good or a bad thing. What has changed really is technology. When we used to do this a long time ago, we had a map of the state with all the jurisdictions on it in a gymnasium, and they used calculations and anything they had. Well, they got a lot of things wrong. Even when they went to handheld calculators and all that, they got a lot of things wrong. So you thought you were creating another Democratic district or another Republican district, and by gosh, you were wrong. And there's a lot of uncertainty in that process, and it took a long time to do. Well, we now, with computers, can do a ton of scenarios in seconds to come up with what we want, and we know to a precise voter that we've got it right. And so you're now seeing too many safe districts, no uncertainty, and the elections are now all decided in the primary and who votes in primaries. Okay, sure. But your real solid core Democrats and solid core Republicans, and those are who are determining the outcome of our now fall elections versus a real general election, which would show a more balanced approach. So I would say, one, really how we do design our districts, and would have to go, I think, to an independent commission. Two, term limits are a problem. I didn't get to the House without term limits, so I've got to be clear with that I probably would never have been to Lansing without it. But 6 years in the House goes extremely fast. I mean, trying to keep and build relationships, it's an ongoing, thing for a legislature. Information is just lost every 2 years on massive, issues. We have to go back and re-educate legislators all the time and try to explain to them why this issue is important. So those two are really
big. No filibusters, Chris. Zoe has a quick question.
Well, no, and that's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about, Chris. As a former Democratic state lawmaker, there is a current Democratic lawmaker, John Hoadley, who I spoke with yesterday from Kalamazoo, who's really pushing the idea of an independent commission now that the U.S. Supreme Court, in a case out of Arizona earlier this summer, said, okay, that's legal. So I was going to ask you, is that something that you would get behind, this idea? Maybe it would be Democrats and Republicans working together independently. Maybe it would be completely independent. But is that something you could get behind?
From a personal perspective only? Yeah, I think
yes,
so.
Yeah.
I really do, and I think it's... Technology has just changed, taken all the error out of it, and it's just too easy to game the system and get the districts you want. And so you have results, as Jonathan, you know, said, where you have a majority in Congress voting for Democrats, but we have a supermajority of
Republicans. He's so right, because last year Elizabeth and I disagreed on a candidate, and the next day we got a notice that our house had been divided into two separate districts. So now I want to return. Now I want to turn to the audience, and as Larry, where is the microphone, Larry?
I think, does Anna have it? Anna's over here.
The glamorous Anna with the dark.
We have no questions. Come on, there's got to be questions for Jack. Oh yeah, there's a question over there. But apparently, we're getting up and walking to Anna to ask questions.
Yes, that's right.
So, okay.
Hi, John Spangler, former
campaign operative.
Hi, Zoe.
John worked for Mark Totten, who ran as the Democrat for Attorney General in this past election cycle.
Exposing all my biases, I see.
Sorry to do that.
But one of the facets of the sort of broken government argument is that we're seeing a lot more government by ballot initiative. And we've seen that from the right in terms of the abortion insurance rider that was put forward a couple years ago. And last year, along with wolf hunting, and now for the next cycle in 2016... There were at least three competing ballot initiatives on cannabis legalization for recreational use. And so I was wondering if you could speak both on how ballot initiatives are being used as sort of government by other means, normally by a very motivated group of citizens, but also the role of competing ballot initiatives, cannabis being a primary example, where you have one group, MI Legalize, which is being...
Do you have this for a specific person?
No, for the panel in general. Both for Jonathan, is, you know, reporting on Lansing, and you, Jack Lessenberry, with sort of the history of ballot initiatives in the state. Because this is a method that has been part of the Constitution for some time.
Well, as Captain Ahab, let me tackle that first, and then my colleagues can correct what I get wrong. In the case, first of all, there's an interesting psychological factor that if you get more than two or three of these things on the ballot, people vote no on all of them. If in 2012 anybody had actually gone to vote, if voters had read all those things in the voting booth, they'd still be voting. So that's a factor. On competing initiatives, it's my understanding that that the one that gets the most yes votes wins if they pass and they cancel each other out. But yeah, this is sort of, those of you who are nearly as old as I may remember, Ross Perot thought that we should have a little clicker at home and we'd watch TV and say, aid the North Korea, you know, we'd figure out what we wanted to do. But having said that, John?
Yeah, sure. The whole petition process allowed under the state constitution was designed to give citizens another way to, propose laws, to initiate laws. But it has become a big business in its own right. There are huge national signature collection groups, which essentially if you want to make the ballot, you have to hire. You have to pay several million dollars to make the ballot. Very rarely do you have just a group of well-intentioned citizens who are actually able to pull this off. So it's another mechanism that has increasingly been used by special interest groups. You mentioned the Right to Life initiative that was, abortion insurance legislation. In that case, the governor had vetoed a bill. In our Constitution, citizens collect enough signatures and send a bill to the legislature, they can approve that without the governor's signature. So it's a way to go around them. That's happening again right now with prevailing wage. There's an effort to repeal the state's prevailing wage law. Again, our governor does not support that. So a group, primarily contractors and the Michigan Freedom Fund, which is a DeVos-related group out of West Michigan, are funding a petition drive. They're going to get enough signatures. They're going to send that to the legislature, and the legislature is going to approve it without the governor's input. So it's a weird mechanism in that case where 8% of the citizens who voted for the governor in the previous election can sign a signature and override the governor. So 8% of the voters have a louder voice.
This,
than
by the
governor.
Way, is a flaw. I've talked to several of the surviving delegates of the last Constitutional Convention. They all said they didn't see this coming. They thought that there'd be maybe one issue every 10 years where you'd have an honest citizens outpouring to put it on the ballot. They did not foresee special interests coming in here and spending all this money.
And this is the idea, right, that as Jonathan was talking a little bit about that money talks, that I think there was an idea years ago that if you wanted to petition your government, there were a couple local folks who would get together, they would stand on the street corner, they would ask for signature. These days, there's folks in Lansing, multi-firms, multi-client firms, whose job it is to specifically do this. They usually pay $1 per signature. I was talking off the record, so I won't use names, but last week, the owner of one of these firms, who said, why don't we ever get any ballots for people to vote no? We would make so much more money than pushing for yes.
By the way, that's what Shaky Jake really was trying to do. He was trying to collect signatures. No
Jeff,
one realized that.
You know
that.
Shaky Jake? It just blew my mind.
I do not discuss my relatives in public forum. This lady right here has been waiting for a long time.
My name is Catherine Boring. I'm from Pinckney, and to preempt that, I am not boring. And Chris might have addressed this in his comments on technology, and I might be naive, but aren't term limits figured by the vote?
I don't understand your question.
It's what you like to say, Jack, which is there are a thing called term limits. It's an election. Is that what you're... Yeah.
Well, originally, yes. We had natural term limits are called elections. But now now you can only serve 6 years in the House, 8 in the Senate, and then you can never serve again. A friend of mine who was a legislator and is now a judge said that in Michigan, there's only two kinds of people we don't allow to serve in the legislature. Number one, those who've proven they can do it and have the support of their constituents. And number two, those in Jackson Prison.
Let's not forget that term limits were also approved by voters. It's one of those things that just like a part-time legislature sounds great
exactly.
to a lot of people on the surface. But when you start looking at individual races, people might not agree with the policy as much or the outcomes that we've seen since then. So it was approved. It polled very well. And
continues to do so. Yeah. I mean, it still polls really well. In fact, when I said term limit reform, I was like ready to have like tomatoes thrown at me, and hearing claps was interesting. Because it's not something, I mean, the sound of it sounds really good, right? Throw the bums out after a couple years. And in fact, what we have right now is lobbyists writing legislation and multi-clients because they know the issues better than lawmakers themselves.
In case you're still inclined to think they're a good idea, let me give you something to think about. Why don't we have term limits for brain surgeons? They can only do this for 6 years, and then they can't do it anymore, and you have to get some new guy who just started.
Another issue with term limits is what will be the legislature the legislator that proposes changing them? It instantly looks self-serving. It's very difficult to get done.
Well, you write it not to affect incumbents.
Yeah, right. Sure.
Well, and exactly. The former Senate Majority Leader Randy Richardville was pushing for something that would be a little bit of a hybrid, which was, okay, we would keep term limits, lengthen them, but then individual lawmakers could go out in their community, and if they could get a certain number of signatures from the community, then they would be able to get back on the ballot. And he was lambasted for it, and it didn't go anywhere.
Realize this, comrades. The special interest do not want to end term limits. Term limits enable them to control the legislators much more effectively to control legislation. They love it.
I'm going to disagree. I don't think that if you talk to most lobbyists, you talk to most people outside of a handful, they'd rather have experienced legislators who they know they can go there, get an honest answer, know that they can impart some information on them, And know what they're going to get in return.
People like you are not in league with the devil, want that.
Well, but here's the... And so it's not that the interests don't want to change term limits. It's the voters. The voters today do not see or care what's going on in Lansing. They don't. We all, most of us, some of us answered that Lansing is broken. But to a lot of people out there, it's not broken, and they're okay with term limits. And until that changes, it's not going to change. And so you show me a poll that it gets anywhere near 50%, and I'll jump up and down.
Yeah.
The closest we can get is to extend them to something like 14 years in either chamber.
Absolutely.
Next question.
Hi, my name's Harry Gable. I'm from Scioto Township. You were speaking in terms of ballot initiatives. And I'm wondering, with the Arizona decision by the Supreme Court, if Michigan has a foot something of the nature that would diminish the gerrymandering that's been going on in Michigan for the past few cycles.
There is indeed. So Harry, the first person to visit me at the hospital when I was born, let's just throw that out because that's just a wonderful fact. I know. Yeah, there is, actually. I was speaking, and this is what I was asking Chris earlier about. So John Hoadley and Jeremy Moss, they are both freshman Democratic lawmakers. They are introducing legislation that would do exactly that. They would create an independent commission. And when they said they were introducing that into the state legislature, every single person that follows politics laughed at them, of course, because why would Republicans ever pass anything like that? So the next idea is looking forward. There are some what we like to call good democracy groups. So this is Common Cause. This is the League for Women Voters are now trying to go ahead and put a ballot initiative for 2016 for folks to vote on that. But there is an interesting dynamic here, and that is that we have a new chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. His name is Brandon Dillon. And when he was interviewed last week by reporters and off the record, he said that this will not be something, a ballot initiative that Democrats will get behind. And everyone at first went, say what? Isn't this exactly what Democrats want? And if you do want to go down the equation that Lansing is broken, that government is broken, the reason, if you want to read between the lines, is this is not something the Democratic Party can push for as a ballot initiative. So instead, you'll see these good governance groups likely start signatures because it won't go anywhere in the legislature, and you likely here in Ann Arbor will be able to sign on to that.
I'll give you a little scoop on this, Zoe. What if I were to tell you that there is a prominent Michigander who is a Republican who's thinking about leading this effort?
Who, about leading this effort?
Uh-huh. He's considering leading this effort, and I think he'd be a perfect person to do it.
And is he looking for a Democratic sponsor, or would he do it by himself?
No, the trouble is, I think he would like all the help he can get, but as you say, if it's perceived as a Democratic effort, it's not going to go anywhere. You need to have a Republican behind it.
In front of everyone, if I guess names, will you say who it is?
Absolutely.
Would it be Joe Schwartz?
It would indeed. Next question, from somebody who wasn't there when Zoe was born.
Chuck Fellows from Brighton, Michigan. The question is, will public financing of campaigns be an offset for term limits?
I don't understand. Could you clarify that?
If we go to public financing of campaigns, can we put an end to term limits?
Anybody?
I'm not sure that there's a huge push for public financing of campaigns. There was a recent study that came out that showed that Debbie Stabenow, out of all of our congressional delegations, was the poorest member of Congress, and I think she was at $1.2 million or something like that. So I don't think you're ever going to see a huge push from folks, including Barack Obama, who initially said he was going to take...
No, that's federal. That's federal.
Well, and this is what I guess I was talking federal. Are you talking about statewide?
Here's the problem with that. We actually do have it. Nobody knows it. We have it for gubernatorial elections, but everybody forgot. We got a catch-22. The reason that we had it for a little bit, but then the cost of campaigns so far outstripped that nobody takes it. However, the problem is that the U.S. Supreme Court in the famous Citizens United decision said you can't limit campaign spending. So the state of Michigan would go broke very rapidly if they promised to, totally fund campaigns. The only way I can see you doing that is if the FCC were to set a limit on broadcast spending for broadcast communications over the air, which they conceivably could do. But I think it's very, very unlikely.
And on public radio salaries, when we talk money, we talk to Lester Graham. And Lester has for years covered dark money and public financing, so I want to bring him up
quickly.
So Lester Graham, folks.
Well, thanks. I deserve that less than Jack does.
That's saying something.
So there's a group I follow pretty closely, and most of these guys do too. It's called Michigan Campaign Finance Network. It's operated by a guy named Rich Robinson. Now, I've gone around to Rich goes around to the different TV stations during election cycle years and tries to find out who's spending money, where that money is coming from, and who's benefiting from it. That's been pretty easy, and he's been able to put out some really good reports over the last several years. But lately, because of the increased number of PACs, super PACs, because of Citizens United, he's not been able to find out who's backing some of these candidates. There are, and at the same time, he's seeing this huge escalation of funds that he cannot believe. He can't fathom it, and he adds these numbers up. So until we see, it's getting to the point where you as a candidate can raise all the money you want. It's kind of laughable because somebody else is raising a lot more for on your behalf. Maybe you don't even like it. Some of the Supreme Court justices have told me they hate the fact that these outside groups are putting ads on for them because sometimes they're demeaning to the judges themselves, the justices themselves. So we have a real problem. There's a lots of hidden, dark money, and it increases every year to the point, even in off-election years, it just keeps rising.
Sure. Yeah, the issue with public financing in Michigan elections, it is allowed right now, and Mark Schauer actually took public financing in the primary, in the gubernatorial election. And what that does is it limits the amount his campaign can spend. There's a limit there, which only means that outside groups spent way more money. The Republican Governors Association and the Democratic Governors Association spent most of the money in that gubernatorial race, and they don't file campaign disclosure reports here in Michigan. So that's outside money that's harder to track. I mean, limiting the amount that candidates can spend here is only going to increase the amount.
The way it works now is this, and this is actually happening in Supreme Court cases. I'm going to exaggerate a little, but not much. I could form a group, a PAC called Citizens for Baby Guinea Pigs, and I could take vast amounts of funding from the American Nazi Party and every other bad group I thought, and run commercials blasting my opponent, and the public would have no right to know where that money came from. It would just say Citizens for Baby Guinea Pigs. So that's the problem we got.
Okay, should we keep moving on? Questions now that we're at
Good
Citizens
idea.
For Baby Guinea Pigs?
I thought I was a moderator. Yes.
My name's Casey Jackson, and my question is along the same lines. And I see the excessive amount of money as being a detractor for our ability to function as a democracy. But I don't have a lot of experience or knowledge base in terms of examples of where, a lot of concrete examples where too much money in the system biased a legislature towards a particular decision, a big decision. And so I was wondering if you...
I'll give you one.
How about
you
roads?
One?
Please give me many. I need to know.
Chris has got one.
Okay, Chris.
Thank you.
The one that pops to my mind is the... though it did happen, but the second international bridge from Windsor to Detroit was held up by Matty Maroon for a long time. And that was purely on this, campaign dollars. And it didn't take him a lot of money to do that.
He bought the whole legislature.
And the Senate, and or part of the Senate.
He bought the House, too. And the only way it happened was that Snyder, who he couldn't buy, made a separate deal with Canada under an obscure part of the Michigan Constitution. But that effectively muzzled the legislature. One guy bought the Michigan legislature. Next gentleman.
Hi, my name is Alan Levy. I'm from Ann Arbor. Zoe, my daughter Alyssa, and you were classmates at Mack Elementary, lo, these many years ago.
Alyssa was at my 10th birthday party sleepover. Obviously, you can tell all that I was born and raised here in Ann Arbor. It's slightly embarrassing, but yes, go ahead. Oh. Harry was not at her birth, though, correct?
No. As far as I know, I don't remember everything.
Well, Calvin Coolidge was at my 10th birthday party. Yes, sir.
So I have a question for probably Jack and Zoe.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you have some accounting for why Governor Snyder seems to have disappeared from the public arena and is a passive bystander, whether it's on roads or many other critical issues. He has an opportunity as a lame duck to really come out, as he did with Medicaid, and take a
Jack
stand.
Jack and I have an answer.
One, two, and a three.
Proposal one.
The governor ran all over the state begging people to vote for his road proposal, wearing a hard hat, and 80.1% of the people said, stuff it.
No, exactly. And this is something that the governor has, and just for those of you who might not know this, he's buying a new loft a couple blocks from here. So maybe let's be on the lookout in case he decides to come this evening.
I, I, would,
No. This is something. Yeah, Jonathan, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, I would just add that I think the faith-based adoption bill that he signed was very unpopular, and his poll numbers tanked after that, and he did sort of disappear. And as a reporter, of course, we all wanted to ask him about that, and then we didn't see him for 3 weeks. Yeah. So little skepticism.
I always end up doing this with the governor, but
because your friend,
he is my friend, and I do appreciate that he is friendly to me, and he does give me access. Doesn't always listen to me, which is a bad thing, but I don't think it's his style either. He's not someone that is real comfortable being out front always publicly. He likes to work more one-on-one with people. You'll see legislators complain that he's not around enough either. And it's just, you know, the past governor didn't really like to do things with legislators either. So there are different personality types. And I think his just is not one that he wants to really be out front. But when he is, he can be effective outside of, I think, you know, Prop 1 that was just doomed, you know, to fail on its own. But
sure, I don't think it's a lack of trying either. I mean, Governor Snyder, from all accounts, is a workaholic. He's busy doing things all the time, not necessarily in the public eye, though. But yeah, when it comes to roads specifically, we've seen even that he's left town during a couple of key moments, which didn't play well. But he's got people on the ground working those issues for him.
Right, and this goes back, I think, because, you know, the last Republican governor was John Engler, and folks will often compare the two and say if Engler had wanted roads, what he would have done is brought every single Republican lawmaker and said either you're going to vote for my plan or see that guy sitting on the couch or see that woman sitting on the couch in my office. They're going to primary you in 2 months. So you vote for me or I'm putting all of my
effort. There's another factor in that Engler literally spent his entire adult life in the legislature. Mark Schauer, who someone mentioned earlier, told me when he was a freshman Democratic legislature, Engler called him in and showed him, to his astonishment, he knew everything about Battle Creek. He knew what the district needed. The clear implication was, you play ball, you'll get something.
Yeah. So shall we take a break at this point?
Let me do one thing. I'm going to charge you, the audience, with something. We can ask your question, answer questions all night long, but as you all know, if there's any group that's failed more miserably than the legislature, it's the journalist. So what I would like you to do, if you are willing, when we resume after a 10-minute break to get guzzled, is that you tell us, some of you, I'd like you to tell us what you most think might happen to improve things, and we'll tell you whether we think or not it can fly.
Right, but we are going to keep the line in order because we are a democracy. So if you are in line, grab a beverage, and then in like 10 minutes we'll begin from the end, and maybe we'll take questions up here.
Exactly.
Okay, wonderful. Break.
You're a great group.
Okay.
Okay, comrades, everybody.
Including Jeff Irwin.
Including Jeff Irwin.
You're not paying attention at all.
We want to get back and continue the process of enlightening ourselves.
I want to
apologize because of my prolonged senescence. I referred to our master, Steve Chapinski, as Larry. But he is actually Steve. Larry is a much, much older man. So, moving, first of all, who's our next questioner? Where is our mic technician?
This is going to make Steve rethink the whole intermission idea, huh? He's already like, we're not doing this.
That's right.
We need the little bell.
Okay.
Dim the lights.
All right, let's listen to the person who's going to either ask us a question or propose a solution. Go ahead, ma'am.
Let's fix government.
Hi, my name is Judy Foy. I am a Ann Arbor consultant on communications. And this, the idea for this question came up when Chris was talking. Chris, you talked about the fact that if you show me some sort of a survey that says people will not support term limits or the end of term limits more than 50%, I've heard that so much about so many issues, and I'm thinking, you know, leadership has nothing to do with polling them. Leadership has to do with understanding that we have to make them understand what's going on, like this, about the idea of lobbyists writing legislation. I'm just wondering, and here's my question. I didn't mean to polemicize, but I'm just saying that Don't you think there's a chance that we can do something by educating people, communicating? And it doesn't have to be a separate thing. It has to be an understanding among people who are in office. Can't we urge them to say this is important?
I mean, some of the discussions that go on in Lansing, a lot of people, this is an issue and have talked about it, and they've looked at the polling, and yes, you have to lead at times. But what happens is that this is not a high enough issue for most of the people who would provide the campaign funds you would need to convince the public to do it, that something else comes along is a higher priority. So it always drops down to number three or four, and we'll get to it, you know, again. Legislators, I think Jonathan has mentioned that any legislator that introduces this, you're just, you know, you're laughed out of town because it's not gonna go anywhere. Randy Richardville, you know, got bruised and beat up over a proposal that he had. So, I think for a lot of issues you can, but the problem is that the public doesn't have a sense, or they don't feel that there is a problem. And
well, then you educate them. I think you said the best comment any of us have said all night. That's right. Just imagine, what if 20 years ago I sat here and said, in the year 2015, it will be possible everywhere in America for a man to marry a man? Yeah. Or what if, in the year 2002, I had said to you, the next president of the United States will be a black guy with an African name whose father's a Kenyan Muslim. You know, you would have ran me out of town on a rail. So I think I understand Chris's hardened skepticism. He's a very bitter man from his years in the legislature and dealing with, you know, environmental polluters. But I like to think, you know, you are one more reason that I won't saw at my wrist tonight when I go home.
So thank you for that.
I just note from a procedural standpoint, too, changing term limits is a pretty high hurdle to clear. It would require a constitutional amendment. So if the legislature wanted to do it, they'd first have to get two-thirds majorities. Three-quarters? Two-thirds, I think. A supermajority in both chambers, followed then by a vote of the people. So it's a pretty elongated and arduous process. It might be easier just for a constitutional amendment to be proposed by citizens. But we mentioned earlier those are expensive, and you'd probably need some third-party group to back you.
Let me add one other thing. You can always find all sorts of reasons why you can't do anything. One of my favorite quotes ever was from crazy old reactionary Henry Ford I, who once said he was 20% a genius and 80% nuts. But he said, if I had asked people in 1896 what they wanted, nobody would have said a car. They would have said a faster horse. Zoe?
Yes. No, and this is exactly it. And this is the inner politics of all of this, as one of the questions earlier about the ballot initiatives was, at any given time, there is a pool of money. And sometimes that money is more, sometimes it's less. But what progressives and Democrats are working on, and what Republicans and conservatives are working on, is where do we spend our money? And one of the biggest issues about ballot initiatives is in the state house. Do you go and do you try to get more Democratic lawmakers elected? Or do you go and do you do things like a minimum wage ballot initiative? There's fracking right now. As John brought up, there's three, possibly even four marijuana initiatives, and there is only a certain amount of money. And so the conversations that none of us are a part of right now is, where do we allocate that money and what cause is going to become most important? LGBT rights, for example. Although, as Jack mentioned, two men, they could get married right now. Anyone available, Jack could marry you. It would be super fun this evening. But you could then go into work tomorrow morning after Jack married you, and you could be fired for being gay.
No, people who have demonstrated their insanity cannot be fired. There are medical provisions. So anyone who would marry me of any sex, you could see there'd be a big problem.
I was thinking you would be the efficient, but if you want to be a part of that too, go for it. Elizabeth, are your feelings a little down?
Let's behave ourselves and take the next question.
Okay, I'm Margaret Parker. I'm from Ann Arbor. And I'm coming from a little bit out in left field because I heard a challenge from Jack Lessenberry. I heard him say, asking for a challenge for what journalists could be doing more of. Now, my thinking is that we need to unleash our cultural assets, that we are not using our communicators, and those are our artists, our theater people, our comics. If we really want to get some sharp minds and some funny shit going down, we should be using these people. Michigan is underrating its artists. I speak personally as an artist. I worked hard on a Percent for Art program here in Ann Arbor. It lasted for all of 6 years, and nobody knew what happened when it failed. So I think politically, you cannot put us just in the podcasts. You have to report on what's culturally going on. It's deeply political. Every artist is deeply political. So that's my answer to your challenge.
And quickly, also a round of applause for Margaret, because her and Mark Kodash own Downtown Home and Garden. So thank you for being part of the community in that way.
Next victim.
My name is Zach Smith. I'm from Jackson.
Hi, Zach.
And my question has to do with after the failure of Prop 1, there seem to be two major theories about why it failed. One was put forward that people don't want to pay any more taxes. The other side was the people were just pissed off at the legislature for not actually doing their job. How has that played out in the legislature, and what do we see going forward to actually solve this problem?
Yeah. Let's ask Jonathan. Jonathan's got his fingers on the pulse.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we're seeing, at least in the state house initially, we saw that first element where they interpreted it as people don't want to raise taxes. So they put forth a plan that, would mostly reprioritize revenue, would raise a small amount of money from increasing the diesel tax and taxing electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles. But it's a small amount of money. And also eliminate the EITC, Earned Income Tax Credit. That didn't fly very well in the Senate. They are talking about new revenue. The gulf is pretty wide between those two ideas. There's a third element, which I think you didn't mention, the Prop 1, that more liberal voters, I think, were actually really mad still about what happened in 2011 with the tax code changes gave a tax break to businesses and eliminated a bunch of credits and exemptions for regular folks. And what we saw now in the last week was a labor group come out and is putting, proposing a ballot proposal that would raise the corporate income tax by quite a bit. It's a pretty aggressive proposal. I don't know how far it will go, but it seems like that's another reaction to Prop 1, and they're all very far apart. So I don't really know how they're going to find a lot of common ground on this issue, unless that corporate income tax proposal does advance to the legislature, in which case they would have the option to propose an alternative and do something else, and that it would force their hand.
Jonathan, isn't the idea, though, that the momentum right now after Prop 1, there was sort of an idea that if you could get it done in the next 6 weeks before sort of almost about 2 weeks ago when folks were going on summer vacation, that was going to be the time. And then now we're into the end of July. We're going to be into August. Then the fall term starts, and then we're back into an election season. I mean, I think most folks are pretty much under the idea that this is not going to happen now. And that we're going to go through a whole entire yet another year with no road funding fix, another winter with no road funding fix.
Well, I mean, one of the political pundits in Lansing basically said that there's a better chance of the Tigers winning the World Series this year than the legislature passing a real fix for transportation before lame duck of next year. So I would agree that the longer it goes, the more complicated it gets. But Prop 1 crumbled under the weight of itself, and people were mad that the legislature didn't do it themselves. They didn't like the way it was done. They didn't understand how education and the EITC and all these other things had to do with roads. You could find so many things that you didn't like about it that it was just really easy to vote no. It took me 20 minutes to explain to someone why they should vote yes. If on a ballot initiative you've got to take 20 minutes to convince someone that it might have a chance to vote yes, you're in trouble. Politicians, we love to give find any way to rationalize, you know, what our position is right. And so if someone says, I don't like, the voters didn't like to pay taxes, so that's why it was wrong. So our solution is we can't raise taxes. The real solution is going to be somewhere taking an element of all of these things, if we can do it. You're going to have a modest increase in the gas tax. You're going to have a modest increase in your vehicle registration. You're going to have some reprioritization, I can't even say that now, of general fund dollars. You're going to have some reforms. And the two odd ones are you going to have some truck weight dollars in there? And then two, is there anything within the Democratic proposal and now the Labor proposal on the business income tax? One of the areas you could see is that there are tens of thousands of businesses who pay zero, you know, taxes. Could you include a few of them to bring along enough Democratic votes to all of a sudden now you have a package that can get 56 votes in the House, 20 in the Senate, and the governor would sign it? The thing that's missing, and this is where I'm going to kind of go back on what I said about the governor.
I love, Chris, that you keep
leadership.
Looking at Jeff
well,
Irwin.
Well, Jeff is over there. Yeah,
Irwin. Let's just throw down what's going on here right now, which is State Representative Jeff Irwin is here, a Democrat. Hello, Jeff.
And State Rep. Christy Pagan.
Yes, hello, right hello. And so I'm just noticing some eye contact here. I think you're talking directly to these folks here about what needs to happen. I just want everyone to be on the same page here.
But here's the one thing. Let me just finish this one thing. What's Please. Missing is leadership, and this is where the governor needs to step up. There's a deal that's out there to be had. I just laid out one that I thought of just 30 seconds ago. Well, a little bit more than that. But you could put together a deal that works its way through the legislature, and we could get this done. But without leadership, regardless if it's a governor or someone else, it's not going to be done. Two things you don't want to be seen, made, legislation and sausage. Yeah. That's why Proposition 1 lost.
I was going to bring up Jeff and just...
Let me offer, as the person on the panel most shaped like a sausage, let me offer a contrary point of view. I think that Jonathan, while very well informed, was way too kind. All of these proposals are utter bullshit. They are garbage, and I'll tell you why. The Senate proposal, which is the best of them, requires people to go along with cutting the general fund by $750 million a year, but not telling anybody where it would come from. The whatever proposal it is, labor union Democrats proposal on corporate, is a waste of paper and ink. It would only raise half as much money. Yeah, the Republicans are going to go for raising taxes a whole lot on the corporate community. Sure, they're going to do that. The House proposal is a combination of an opium haze and the famous Arthur Laffer curve on a napkin view. But most of it relies on not the things that Jonathan said, but on the mythical belief that a rising tide lifts all boats and the great growth of the Michigan economy will provide money for the world. This is all crap. Actually, the only proposal that I've seen that makes any sense was that from Governor Snyder. Raise the gas tax, call it a user fee, raise the registration. There is a certain rough justice to that, in that I, who drive 35,000 miles a year, would pay a whole lot more than some lady who doesn't drive at all. But none of those proposals now make any sense, and we are getting closer and closer to the next election season. Nothing will happen.
Okay, let's turn the mic over quickly to a state rep here, a Democrat you probably all know here, Jeff Irwin. Some of you probably had likely voted for Jeff. This is his district. Jeff, is this something, Representative, is this something that can get done before lame duck?
Well, I'm not sure if I can wrap up my comments before lame duck. You said you wanted to give me the mic quickly. You know that's not possible, but let me try to be as brief as I can. I will say a couple of things. One, this is made particularly difficult because we've got a Republican majority. They control everything in Lansing. They run for office on the principle that government doesn't work. And then when they're in office, I think they feel an obligation to demonstrate government doesn't work. And so they're up there making sure government doesn't work. They're not entertaining any of these serious proposals. I think Jack Lessenberry laid out what is a reasonable path. The only difference I would take with that is that, look, we haven't raised the gas tax since 1998. I think it's appropriate to fund our roads with a user fee, and that's the gas tax. But there are two problems I have with that. One, I don't think that we should increase the registration fees. I'd rather put the weight on the gas tax rather than registration fees.
I can buy that.
And the big reason is this. Michigan's a big tourist state. We're getting a lot of people driving on our roads from other states. Why would we forswear any opportunity to have those people contributing to pay for our roads?
What about heavy
only
trucks?
Michigan people pay registration, but everybody who drives in Michigan pays gas. We should put the weight there. Yes, we should increase fees and fines on overweight trucks. In fact, I think we should lower the truck weights. However, that's a small part of the overall piece that we need for the revenue, right? And so the other problem with this is that, I have to be honest, after spending the last 4 years in the legislature, the one thing that has been Governor Snyder's signature and has been the signature of the last 4 years is that we have consistently lowered taxes on people of substantial means,
right,
and we have raised taxes on low-income people and middle-class folks. And so what I would love to see is if we're going to increase the gas tax, let's pair that with some tax relief for people who have very little. If you've got someone who's making $25,000 a year, let's give them a tax cut along with increasing the gas tax, make it all work.
Time, Representative. More questions.
Hi, I'm Reed Hamilton. I'm the chaplain of Canterbury House, the Episcopal Campus Ministry here at the University of Michigan.
Boy, you've got your work cut out for you.
Yes,
here.
I do. Bless your heart. Thank you. Jack, you've been a great advocate for term limits reform here in Michigan. And I, too, am a little bit astonished at the lack of support for a move like that here in Michigan. But I'm wondering if there is any issue to which term limits might be tied, right, in a way that would increase support for two things that need to be done as opposed to one. And if you can't think of any, then the other question I would have is, at what point do we reach a level of frustration that a constitutional convention needs to be called in Michigan?
Let me answer that, and then let my colleagues chime in. First of all, I would be very wary of trying to tie term limits to anything else, for we saw what happened with Proposal 1. They loaded up like a Christmas tree, and people would be untrustful of it. By the way, there's a thing that we haven't mentioned. When term limits was sold to the people, was on the ballot in 1992, it was written to apply to federal office holders. And I knew a lot of people who voted for it because, by God, we can get rid of Dingell or Conyers. But and the courts immediately said, I thought the courts would throw the whole thing out. Instead, they had a couple. They said, you can't touch federal office holders, but you can do whatever you want to your local yahoos. Now, the trouble with the Constitutional Convention is this. I was a lonely voice. I was wearing a lion skin and carrying a staff in the wilderness in 2010 saying, we need a Constitutional Convention.
And I had to take those calls.
Hey, that's right. And what happened was the voters said, no, we do not get another chance at that till 2026. Now, I asked the Director of Elections, Chris Thomas, could people do a petition and get a Constitutional Convention before that? He said no. The legislature could put it on the ballot like they're going to. Yeah. So I think, I don't know the polite Anglican way of saying this, but if you can translate it for me, we're screwed. Comrades, anybody else?
That's a technical theological term. You got it right. Thank you.
I would just say, I'm not sure you're going to get any different delegates to that constitutional convention than what you have underneath the dome right now. And so if you don't like what's going on in Lansing, I'm not sure that's actually going to get you anything better. That's just the reality.
It depends on. We'd elect them separately. And by the way, one thing, one other footnote. If they wrote a constitution and we didn't like it, we can always reject it. You get a chance to vote on it. But that's not till 2026, and my main goal in 2026 is going to be to have an attendant pushing me into the light and giving me my help meal. Next question.
Hi, I'm Perry Francis, and for transparency, I'm a professor at Eastern Michigan University.
Good. Of what?
Counseling.
Great.
I would think of opening up a practice in the legislature. I figure I could make a lot of money. So, operating under the premise that an educated populace helps with economic growth, which is a reasonable assumption.
Yeah.
Why then is the legislature at war with education? Particularly, why is the legislature, if you put aside the union issue, why are they trying to defund education in the midst of a populace that needs more education?
And you
could take it the next step, that which I do and my wife does oftentimes, is that an educated population would vote most of the people out of office.
Jonathan communes with these people. Jonathan, take a crack at that.
Well, that's a really tough question. I do talk to these people every day, but nobody is suggesting that they're trying to defund education in Lansing anyways. There are a lot of arguments to be made about funding levels. One thing everybody can agree on is that higher education funding is still down from 4 years ago. That's a verifiable fact. Eastern, I believe, is one of the universities that is trying to buck the tuition restraints proposed by state lawmakers in order to start getting more money from students for operations.
But let's throw something out here too, which is maybe some truth that folks don't want to be laid down, which is Mark Schauer, when he ran for governor, ran basically on the idea that Governor Snyder had cut $1.2 billion from education. The governor said no, that wasn't necessarily the case. And who won as governor again? And I'm not saying that was the only issue, and we saw some polling points change in August when they started talking about education funding. I'm not so sure, though, that as much as teachers and teachers' unions talk about it, is it an issue, Jonathan, as it was years ago? I mean, it seemed to fall on some deaf ears.
I think certainly the first year the governor took office, there were significant cuts in there. The funding level has technically surpassed the hard dollars, but, I mean, you consider inflation, you consider rising costs in the classroom and things like that, and, I mean, the word on the ground is that teachers still don't have the resources they need. So how much is needed? That's an interesting question, and that's one sort of... A footnote to Proposal 1 is that part of that process, there was an education funding study that was approved, and it wasn't tie-barred to Proposal 1. So that's going to move forward, and the state is, we'll see who they hire it and what the parameters are, but the state is going to commission a study to see what the true cost of educating a student in the K-12 system is, and that could really inform this debate.
So
we'll see.
We've got about 5 minutes left.
There's a problem here. That there's a part of your question we haven't addressed, and that is that the legislature may not hate education, but they hate the teachers' unions. The Republicans hate the teachers' unions. Why? Because they have had a habit of giving large amounts of money to Democratic candidates. So they wanted to do the same thing to them as I had to do to my dog so he could run around in the neighborhood. See? So that's what's going on here.
That's true. There's really three funding sources for Democrats, traditionally. Labor unions, the MEA, trial lawyers. And with that money, you get your bulk of your money. Now, if you're the opposition, what are you going to do? You defang the source of your opposition's money. And they've done a really good job of doing that. I mean, you got to give them credos. They had the guts to go out and do it. They took on teachers, and they pretty much have won. And we're reaping it's not the benefits of it. We're reaping, what they sow. And so it is that the politics is very brutal. And if you don't go into a political battle knowing that it's going to be brutal, then stay home and don't do it. But I would agree. I would just tell you this, that education is important. We need to do it. It used to be with higher ed. The state put in 75% of the money, and tuition paid 25%. It then got the 50-50. Now it's completely flipped. It's basically 25-75. We paid the same thing. You can look at corrections in higher education. Corrections was about a quarter of what higher ed was. It's now surpassed it. We just are putting our priorities... have been locking up people and not funding education, in this case, higher education.
But on the good side, on the plus side, years from now, Zoe's children can look forward to careers as poorly paid prison guards. We have about 10 minutes left.
I thought they were going to help you in the nursing home.
That too. I'll be dead by then. Next question.
Hi, my name is Jane Burton, and I'm from Ann Arbor. And my question is this. more prosperous states than Michigan have part-time legislators, like Oregon, I don't know where else. And why wouldn't Michigan benefit from a part-time legislator? Legislature.
Jonathan? And then we'll take our own per capita of legislator here.
Well, I think a lot of the arguments I've heard against a part-time legislature are similar to term limits, which is that, if you have a part-time legislature that's paid less, it's not going to be their full-time job, or they're going to be retired and independently wealthy. So you've got a select group of candidates that you would probably have running for those offices. And the less information they have, if they're only coming in for 3 months, the lobbyists are probably going to be working them hard for the 2 months before they arrive in Lansing, yeah, and sort of, helping catch them up to speed, to say it nicely. I think a lot of the arguments are very similar with term limits. It sounds great on its face. The savings to the state, in terms of the larger budget, would be pretty minimal.
What is it, like $1.2 million or something?
Yeah,
really?
Well, there's legislative staffers and all that.
Here's
stuff.
The thing,
but it's not going to fix the roads or something
like
that.
And here's the idea, and this just comes from getting all of angry emails from folks after a segment that we've done on stateside, or it's just politics or something like that. And what I notice is when folks aren't in power is when there absolutely should be reform, right? And so one of the things that I've noticed is I'll hear from a lot of Democrats, from a lot of progressives and liberals, if you don't like what's happening in Lansing right now, you absolutely want a part-time legislature. What I've noticed, too, though, is Republicans, they're like, absolutely. And let's not disagree with the fact that if Democrats were in charge right now, we would be hearing the exact same thing. Immediate effect, one of those exact kind of really kind of political sticky issues that Democrats used to... Yes, Chris?
We never died.
Oh, no, you guys never used it. No, the Democrats absolutely used, and Republicans said that's unfair, and then Republicans used it, and Democrats said that's not fair. Everyone games the system until they're not in charge, and then they want to change things.
And I would say with the part-time ledges, just be careful, Jonathan, be careful for what you wish for, because you might just get it.
Yeah.
Who out there could take 90 days off your current job, go to the Capitol and spend 90 days there, and then go back and expect that you're going to have a job where you're at? There may be a few of you, but not too many. Other states that have it, I'm not seeing any better real decision-making down there. I think the models you look for are places that make the right investments for what the future economy needs, and so the state I would look at, too, is Minnesota. Is a high-tax state, but it makes great investments in the things that matter, in education, in their communities, in transportation, in natural resource protection. It's growing the real talent, development is what they're doing. They're creating a great state to go to, and they operate in the top 10 in almost everything, including the highest tax, up there in the top 10 with taxes, but they're making investments. I can run my house on very little money, but when I need to put a roof on, guess what? I can't do that. It will start to leak. And it may not leak in 5 years and 10 years, but I'll swear to God it will start leaking in 20 and 25 years. And unless you put the money in and make the investments today, our state's headed one way and it's not up.
We can take just two more questions. What? Pardon? What? This lady. Nope.
Yeah. Sorry, I have a big voice.
This...
Oh, apparently we're wrapping up.
Oh, yeah, this is the last question. We're going to let this lady talk. Quiet. I want to hear a question, then I'll repeat it. Right. The lady's asking if it is in fact true that people don't want to pay more taxes and what polls show. And you could ask a poll in a way that will give you any answer you want. The polling I've seen, if you say to people, do you want to pay more taxes, 99.9% says no. But if they're asked, would you pay money to fix the roads, something like 3/5 to 2/3 will say yes if they're convinced it'll go solely for the roads.
And to bring it back full circle, I think there is a relationship to the districting issue we talked about earlier. If you're a lawmaker in a safe district, you might, you know, safe Republican district, you might be able to make a pledge that you will never raise taxes, which a lot of our lawmakers have done. And, you know, that flies in certain districts, but maybe a more diverse district, that person wouldn't be able to get elected on that promise.
So. I want to thank all of you for being here, for putting up with us tonight, for listening to Michigan Radio. And most of all, I want to thank you for being concerned citizens and thinking about these issues.